Okay, that's the next point. I'm sorry, you're one step ahead of me. That's the next point. That is another aspect of binary form, and it's illustrated in the second example I played on the piano here. This one down here, where if you remember what happened, we started off in the tonic, and when you have Roman numerals like that, that usually refers to key or harmony or something. And remember I said that by the time you got to the end of where A prime is, in this case this would be the end of the first half, by the time you got to this second A, that it sounded like a full cadence, but it wasn't. It was really in another key. Well, what Beethoven has done is he has actually modulated to the dominant. The second phrase of that last example I played on the piano was a full cadence, but not in the tonic key, but in the dominant key. Now, let me make a very clear distinction. This is very important. The difference between being sound, playing the dominant chord and being in the dominant key. If you're in the key of, in this case, it's in the key of G. Let's work with the key of G, whatever the key is. You have, you know, by the way, someone asked me this, and I should have said this and stressed it a little bit more. It doesn't matter what the key is, whether it's G, C, or whatever. All that matters is the relationship between the notes. You can start anywhere and form, it's a matter of how these notes, what sort of relationship they form to each other. Where you start is almost irrelevant as far as these particular aspects are concerned. So, what happened here in this last piece was that Beethoven started, of course, in the tonic. Just like the first phrase is always A, you can almost assume that it'll start in the tonic. And then, as he developed this first part, as he went through these two phrases, when he ended that second phrase, he actually ended on the dominant note, not on the original dominant note, but he made the dominant note sound like a tonic. And so what that stuff at the bottom means, and this will again come back to you when we talk about sonata form, is that he starts the first half, often does this, not all the time, but frequently does this, starts in the tonic, the key of the tonic, and when you get to the end of the first part of the binary form, he's actually in the key of the dominant. That is, the dominant begins to sound like a tonic. That's what that 1 and 5 means, because the dominant's 5 notes up. Then the X means that frequently in larger pieces, in the second half of binary form, the composer will modulate maybe through a varied number of keys. There's no set pattern, but there will be some other modulations. And I just put X in there to indicate others that there is no real pattern. But then at the end, he always comes back to the tonic. We won't stress this part of it until we get down further down the chart to sonata form. Then we'll come back to that a good bit. So at this point, I would like for you to understand it, but don't worry about too much in terms of hearing examples that illustrate this and so forth. You did hear one example that illustrated at least the dominant part, but when we get to sonata form, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about and you'll hear it. And believe me, it'll be quite noticeable what's going on. So, but right now, this is the part we're interested in, the A, B, and return to A. That's binary form. Okay. Now, what happens to binary form? Well, several things can happen. How does a composer use it? He can, first of all, put together several binary forms. And that's exactly what happens in certain kinds of pieces. If you take this next example, which is a minuet from a piece by Mozart. I'm going to play only the first part. Half cadence. The first half. Now he repeats it. Different. It brings back something from A. Now that's repeated. Was it fairly easy to hear that unfold as a binary form? What happens after that? Well, we're going to have a form next that we call ternary form. And how does that work? Well, you can pretty well guess what ternary form is, three-part form, but it's not exactly the same as the two-part binary, that is, because what happens in ternary form is this entire binary unit will then become one part of ternary. So ternary means three parts. And so then we can go to another hierarchical level of lettering, and we can call this whole thing A. And what happens in ternary is you have an A, then you have a B, and then you return to A. So ternary is ABA, but don't mix it up with this kind of ABA. Because what you will hear goes something like this. We have A. All we have to do here is plug another binary in. And that would be, if we want to keep ourselves straight here, we can put different letters on it. Call that C. Then we would have D with bringing back some form of C. See, it's the same pattern. And then we have our A where we go back to this. Now, this may sound very confusing, but I'm going to play this whole movement now. I just played the first part of it. As it unfolds, I think you'll be able to follow it fairly easily. This would be A, which consists of, in this case, of two phrases. B of the binary, the second half of binary. Back part of A. B. Now that's all one huge A. Now we go to another binary. C. Also consists of two phrases, and that's repeated. Now the second half of this. And bring back to C here. That's repeated, the second half of the main B section. Now we go back to big A. One difference at the end here. In this case, he doesn't repeat. It goes on. what you had, what you just heard, was three main sections. The first section, or the last section, was just like the first, except it was shortened a little bit because of the repeats, and the middle section was different. Each one of those three sections was a binary unit in itself. And the difference was, of course, the B section was, I could have pulled the B section out and simply played it by itself and called it binary form. And it was a different, because it was different stuff, but it was that same form over and over. Much music, especially in the classic era, you have consists of this sort of hierarchical layering of sections, or you might think of it, if you want to use computer terminology, as sort of nesting or embedding or something like that, where you'll have one unit, which then several of those go to form a larger unit, and then so forth and so on. This is really quite common. This movement, by the way, what I just played, is a dance movement. Remember when we talked about the general order of movements in a classical or romantic piece? We said it could be three or four movements, and if it's four movements, one of the movements is a dance. And in the 18th century, it would most often be a minuet, and in the 19th century, it would be some other things, which we'll get to. You may have noticed on the program sometimes when, say, a symphony is played by Haydn or Mozart or whatever, it might say for this movement, not just minuet, but minuet and trio. Have you run across that term? Does anybody remember it? Maybe not. Okay. If next time you go to a concert where a classical symphony or a string quartet is going to be played, take a look at the program, and under what will probably be the third movement, it will say minuet and trio. I mention this because sometimes people look at that and say, what on earth does that mean, trio? This is a symphony, this is a full orchestra, you know. What that means is the middle section of a minuet, the B section here, for reasons that I do not know, I don't know if anybody knows this, is called the trio. I'm sure someone has done some research and figured this out, but I'm not familiar with it. And so when we speak of minuet and trio, the A section is called the minuet, and the B section is called the trio. And it unfolds just about every time exactly the way we illustrated on the board here. In fact, the nice thing about minuet and trio and ternary form is this is the most predictable of all the musical structures during at least the classical period. In the romantic, it becomes a little more varied. And you know when you see that, you're going to hear exactly what you just heard. An A section, which consists of a binary form, the B section, the trio, which consists of another binary form, a return to the A section, leaving out the repeats. Before we go, we have just a few minutes. I would like to play one more example of this. And this is, okay, this is the first binary. All of that's repeated. Now this is a good example where B is not really all that different. Almost like a variant of A. But here comes back A, more like the beginning. And this is like the one example we had on the piano. He just extends it out. Now, back to the second half of our binary form. That's the minuet. Now the trio, a new binary form. I'll just use the same one. Now that's repeated. Now the second half of the binary. That's repeated. And bring back some of the first half. Back to the minuet. Second half of the binary. And you noticed when he repeated the minuet part that he did not repeat each half of the binary form. And one other thing you noticed, I'm sure, and that is the B section within the small B within the binary, in this case, was more of a variant of the A than a new and different musical idea. That happens fairly frequently. That's where it becomes a matter of interpretation. Is this going to be something different, or is it going to be a variant? I'd like to ask one question of you. What was the meter? And it's the same meter as in the previous one. Well, okay, it was triple. Did anybody get triple? Okay. I mention that because, remember, these are dance movements. And when you're dealing with dances, rhythm and meter is all important. I mean, how many times would you march to a waltz time or something like that? You know, you have 2 feet and so forth. So that's the reason I mention that. And we'll come back to that occasionally because there will be times when meter will be very, very important.